We're going to talk about the withered fig tree this morning. Everybody remember that story in the Bible? It's kind of an odd story. It's like Jesus is kind of like in a bad mood or something, and he takes it out on this poor tree. I mean, the tree didn't do anything to him. It's just kind of sitting there by the side of the road, and it's not in season, and Jesus curses it, and it's dead. It's crazy, huh? You'd think that it's got to mean something, right? You wouldn't think that Jesus is just kind of in a bad mood, and he just did it because of that. You'd think that he did it on purpose, right?
Yeah.
Well, that's what I think, too. So I wanted to talk a little bit about just symbolism itself. Since the kids are in here, I'm sure they're going to understand this. an example of that, we don't need to turn there, but Matthew chapter 13 is the parable of the sower. You familiar with that one? That's the one with the different soils and the farmers throwing the seed, and some of the seed goes on the path, and some goes where there's rocks, and some goes where there's weeds, and some goes where there's good soil, and it becomes, you know, a crop. So what's interesting about this particular parable is that Jesus interprets it for us. Because the apostles are there, and they're like, why do you use parables all the time, and what does this mean? And he's like, okay, I'll tell you what it means. So what do you think, though? It's hard to like erase things in your mind, right? But what do you think you would have come up with if Jesus hadn't told you what it was? Do you think he would have come up with what he said? Do you think the theologians around the world that all seem to be able to agree on things, do you think they would have been able to come up with it? It's possible. I'd like to think that maybe we might have come up with it. But it certainly helped that he did, right? But he didn't do it for all of them. So I think it's a good idea to use the parable of the sower sort of like a key, sort of like an idea of a method of how to maybe interpret other types of parables and symbols. So what you see in this story, though, is that all the various things that he mentions symbolically, they mean something. So it's not just that he kind of threw it in there like, oh, there's some in the path, but don't worry about the path. That's just kind of because there's always paths, right? So then let's look at the rocks. Okay, yeah, sometimes there's rocks. No, every single thing meant something. But things that weren't in the story didn't mean anything. Now, does that make sense? I mean, you can. That's what I kind of put in here is at the bottom is underinterpreting and overinterpreting. So underinterpreting would be like throwing out some symbols, maybe because you just don't really know what they mean or something, or maybe they really are just superfluous. So you just we don't really know what that is. Let's look over that. But then overinterpreting is also possible. That would be putting details into the story that aren't there. Like you could say, gosh, there's rocks under the soil, you know, that could be granite. And the granite could mean this. And there could be limestone. And water goes through limestone, so that could be like the Holy Spirit. You know what I'm saying? It's just not in there. So, you know, you don't want to overinterpret, that's for sure. I also put in there that you see that understanding the culture and knowledge of the time are necessary. Now, you might not think it's necessary because farming's farming. But farming's not farming. I mean, if the ancients were to look at how we farm now, they wouldn't even know what's going on. I mean, it's amazing how like one farmer in this big rig thing can do hundreds of acres, you know, plant and then harvest and all this at one time. But nevertheless, we still have a knowledge of what farming is, right? Now, maybe you go a couple hundred years in the future, and people be like, what? They used to, like, just throw the seed around? What are these guys doing? What is this parable about? They might not even recognize it as farming. You know what I'm saying? So you do need to know a little bit about the culture. If you didn't know anything about farming and how they farmed back then, you would have a difficult time understanding this parable. Understand? All right. Moving right along. Okay, so let's use this to talk about the fig tree. Let's go over to Matthew chapter 21. It's in the Bible in two different places, in Matthew 21 and Mark. We'll look at both places. So Matthew 21, verse 18, it says, "Early in the morning, as Jesus was on his way back to the city, he was hungry. Seeing a fig tree by the road, he went up to it, but found nothing on it except leaves. Then he said to it, 'May you never bear fruit again.' Immediately the tree withered." Wow. Okay, so he was hungry. That kind of makes sense. I'm kind of in a worse attitude, right? When I'm kind of hungry. So maybe that's part of the story. All right, let's go over to Mark chapter 11, verse 12. Let's see. In the next day, as they were leaving Bethany, Jesus was hungry. Seeing in the distance a fig tree and leaf, he went out to find out if it had any fruit. When he reached it, he found nothing but leaves, because it was not the season for figs. Then he said to the tree, "May no one ever eat fruit from you again." And his disciples heard him say that. Now, in this particular version of the story, they don't see it till the next day that it's withered. It's probably kind of a combination of the two stories. The authors kind of put in different details as they had them. And so it's kind of like I'm into GPS. That's what my career is. And whenever they say on the news or something like, the GPS precisely puts you on the map or something like that, it depends on your definition of precise. I mean, in the city, GPS can be off by like 50 meters because of reflections off of buildings and things like that. So is that precise? Well, you're in the city, so that's good. Did it immediately wither? Did it wither the next day? I'm not sure. It depends on your definition of immediate. But the point is, it withered. It was dead. It looks like, you know, like the stuff in California that just burns all the time. I don't know if you've ever been to California. I go to California once a month. And it's amazing the whole state's not on fire. Because you look out in the hills, it's just all dried up, dead things. Only place that's green, except for in a couple months during the spring and the winter, it's green. Everything else is dead. At any rate, this one tree looked like that, if you can picture it. Okay, what did I put here? Okay, so let's look at the elements. Good. So just like we did with the farming. So here is Jesus. He comes across. He's on a road. Does that make it make? Is that part of the story? I don't know. He's on a road. He sees this fig tree on the side of the road. Now, the fact that it's a fig tree, that could mean something. You know, is it a pine tree? Did they have other types of trees there? I'm sure they did. He talked about a mustard tree one time, right? We know they had olive trees. Used to go up and pray on the Mount of Olives. So they had different kinds of trees. So maybe the fig tree, the fact that it's a fig tree and not just any other tree, means something. Then Mark, it specifically gives us details, which is good, because otherwise you might have to know a little bit more about the culture and go, or know more about fig trees and go, well, you know, they have different types of seasons, and sometimes they're in their leaf phase, and other times they're in their fruit phase. But here Mark just tells us this particular tree and this season that they're in wasn't the fruit season. It was just the leaf season. So that could have something to do with the story. You agree? Okay, good. And let's see what else is there. Oh, well, then of course the tree dies. And Jesus says this statement, and he says it the same thing in both Gospels. May no one ever eat fruit from you again. So that's got to have something to do with it, right? So what I'm trying not to do is overinterpret this passage. By the time I'm done with it, you might very well think that I have overinterpreted this passage. But there's a reason why I named my website The Withered Fig Tree. Because I think the story is very significant. Very, very significant. But let's just go through it slowly so that I don't stretch it too much. Okay. Now, I went ahead and put the bullet here just to tell you ahead of time. Because I know I lose certain people, like Jeff. Jeff, you still with me? Okay, good. Let me just tell you right away what I think this means. So this was symbolic, and this is really what I think Jesus was doing here. He wasn't just angry. He wasn't just killing a poor tree for no reason. He was condemning mankind's decision to have the knowledge of good and evil instead of trusting God and relying on his grace. Wow. Now that's a stretch. Doesn't that seem like a stretch? I mean, he just killed a fig tree. How could it mean all that? I don't know. That's what I think. Let's move on. Okay. Now, here we go. Let's go. Shall we? Now, there was something culturally significant about fig trees. So I think that it was important. It was an important element, facet of the story, that it was a fig tree and not some other tree. So the Jews back then thought that the fig tree, if you remember back to the story of the Garden of Eden, back in Genesis 2 and 3, there were two trees in the garden. There's actually lots of trees, but there were two special trees in the middle of the garden, the scriptures say. One of them was called the tree of life, and the other one was called the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, which is quite specific if you think about it. Not as a kid, but just as a younger person, used to call it the tree of knowledge. So I thought, well, you'd get smart when you eat it or something. But it's specifically a type of knowledge. It's the knowledge of good and evil. So it's not just any knowledge, like math, you know, or how to farm or something like that, agriculture. It's the knowledge of good and evil. So there were these two trees, right? Now, the Bible doesn't say what kind of trees they were. They may have been both produced. They both produced fruit, but maybe they were just odd fruit. Kind of like when you go to the Asian section or something and they have these weird fruits that you've never seen before. No, they're great fruits. I'm not trying to be racist towards the trees. But there are these fruits that I've never seen before, like dragon fruit and stuff. I mean, they're really cool looking, too, or even like kiwis. And kiwis are kind of like normal nowadays, but it seems like we didn't have them here when I was a kid. When we first got a kiwi, it was like, it's green. Anyway, you see all these weird fruits. So maybe it was this weird fruit that you've never, ever seen before. Who knows? But, you know, if you look in the Renaissance paintings, what did they paint? What was the fruit? An apple, that's right. So I don't know which artist it was, but they thought, let's put an apple there on the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. You see like Eve there reaching up for the apple. Bible doesn't say it was an apple, but the Bible doesn't say what it was. But why did the Jews think that it was a fig tree then, that its fruit were figs? Well, it's because after they ate the fig tree and they realized that they were naked, what do? They covered themselves with fig leaves. That's right. So they figured there had to be at least a fig tree nearby. So maybe that was the tree. Now, I don't think they really thought, like, for sure this was a fig tree. But it was. You can see this a lot with the Jews, that whatever is there in the scriptures, they would use. Whatever wasn't there, they wouldn't use. I'll give you a short example. Like, remember when Jesus says, when two or more are gathered, then I'm with you. So it's like if you're alone praying, Jesus isn't there. Sorry. You're all alone. So what Jesus was really referring to is the fact that the Jews thought there had to be at least 10 people there for church. Now, where do they get that? Well, it's because when Abraham was bargaining with God about the city of Sodom and Gomorrah, and he said, hey, what if there's 20 people there? What if there's... Well, he stops at 10. What if there's 10 people there? So they kind of took out of that you had to have at least 10 people. Jesus is like, no, you don't even need two. You mean one person is fine. So that's, you know, you can see how they use those details. We probably just read right over that and say, oh, he stopped at 10. But no, they said 10. Okay, that must be the number for a church, right? So the Jews would do that kind of thing. So, case in point, they thought or considered that it might be that the fig tree may have been the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. They did it so much that they would even have their quiet times, per se, or they would read scrolls from the Bible under fig trees. That would be, if you're going to choose any tree to have your quiet time, you would do it under a fig tree. Now, why would they do that? Now, if you can remember from the story of Philip and Nathanael, where Jesus says, you know, they've never found in Israel true with it. Maybe we should turn some of these scriptures, but you guys know them, right? I'm trying to do this short, right? So why would they, you know, think that this would be a good place to have your quiet time? Well, it's because it's a tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And where do you find the knowledge of good and evil? TV, of course. You just turn the channel on, and if it's rated PG, well, then that's okay. And if it's rated PG-13, well, you got to be at least 13. No. The knowledge of good and evil is defined in the Bible. And specifically for the Jews back then, it was defined in the law. And they were into the law, right? But not just like laws like don't drive your camel too fast. It was laws of God that they were really into. And what do laws tell you? Well, most of the time laws tell you not what not to do. So they define what is evil because you shouldn't do it. But you can also see them defining what is good, right? Kind of the converse of that. If it says you can't drive your camel too fast, 10 miles an hour, well then driving 5 miles an hour is fine. See? So where do you find the knowledge of good and evil? In the Bible, but specifically in the law. Got it? Okay, good. See, we're getting this. Okay, so I put in here fig tree, tree of the knowledge of good and evil. I always abbreviate that as TKGE because that's just too long to put tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Now, getting the knowledge of God did not want them to have. Now, that's interesting. I think we should turn to the Bible. Should we use the Bible? Yeah. Let's turn over to Genesis. Chapter 2. Verse 16. Or even verse 15. That's the first book, by the way. I hear a lot of turning, but maybe you have to get past the table of contents or something. Chapter 2, verse 15, it says, "The Lord God took the man and put him in the Garden of Eden to work it and take care of it. And the Lord God commanded the man, 'You are free to eat from any tree in the garden, but you must not eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. For when you eat from it, you will certainly die.'" So that's not a good fruit. You will die if you eat it. Okay, so then here, let's go a little bit longer. You got he looks through all the animals for a good friend, but they don't find one. So then he creates Eve. And then in chapter 3, that's where all this happens. So in verse 1 of chapter 3, it says, "Now the serpent was more crafty than any of the other wild animals that God had made." You know what? Actually, we went back here to find out about... Well, yeah, let me just stop here. So, he says, "You must not eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil." Why? Because you'll die. But why? And why even put the tree there, for crying out loud? You got these guys running around and you put the deadly tree right in the middle of the garden? Right next to the good tree that's the tree of life? I don't know, there's some interesting things going on, to say the least. But there's this tree, knowledge of good and evil, and you're not supposed to eat the fruit from it. So that would imply that God didn't want them to eat the fruit, right? Okay, I'm trying to make this nice and simple. Jeff's still with me? He was fading a little bit, but he's still there. Bevon, keep an eye on him, would you? Jeff is like my bouncing board. It's like, okay, am I going too deep? Yes, okay. All right, so he hadn't created them with this knowledge of good and evil, whatever it is. And I don't have time to get all philosophical or theological, but it'd be kind of interesting to think of what Adam and Eve were like without this knowledge. of good and evil. They had all kinds of other knowledge, but whatever it is about this knowledge of good and evil, they didn't have. I kind of think of it kind of more as like a childlike innocence. You know, children are really smart, really crafty, but there's just some sort of innocence. You know, why did you do that? Oh, you know, that's kind of innocent. So he didn't want them to have this knowledge, and you could say if he didn't want them to have this knowledge, you could also go so far as to say he didn't create them to have that kind of knowledge. So there's something about the way he created them that they couldn't handle it, maybe is the way of saying it. I don't know, some of these things I'm just kind of giving my ideas on. But you can see there's a lot here. And a lot of us have questions. Sometimes we move on from questions because it's like you don't really hear the answers. You're not sure if the answers are really there. You've heard people and you can kind of tell they're just making stuff up. But we all have these questions. You know, like the Bible says in Ecclesiastes 3 that God has set eternity in the hearts of men. We can't fathom it. We have questions like, why did God put the tree there? Why didn't he want him to have good knowledge of good and evil? You know, why did God seem to be so angry in the Old Testament, but so nice in the New Testament? You know, we have questions like that, and they're great questions. We shouldn't just move on from them. Okay, so he said, don't eat from it or you'll die. Okay, so then we know the story, right? What did Satan say? He says, did God really say you must not eat from the tree in the garden? You can just kind of see him kind of being crafty here. The woman said to the serpent, we may eat fruit from the trees in the garden, but God did say, you must not eat fruit from the tree that is in the middle of the garden. You must not touch it or you will die. Now, he didn't say that specifically to us. Maybe he said that to Adam later on. In fact, Eve wasn't even there when he said this stuff, so we know that Adam had relayed this to her, or maybe God did. But he did say, don't eat it. Then he says, you will certainly not die. The serpent said to the woman, for God knows that when you eat from it, your eyes will be opened, and you will be like God, knowing good and evil. So you can see how he's like a used car salesman here. I don't know if we have any in the audience, but let's just say a good salesman, okay? Not a used car salesman, but you can see how he's selling this. It's like, you won't die. Now, remember, a lot of this stuff, but a good lie, the kids are in here, so I don't want to tell them how to lie. But a good lie has to have a lot of truth in it, right? I mean, if you just go off on this wild thing, then everybody just knows, oh, that's just a lie. But if you cover it in sugar coating and chocolate and disguise it like a wolf in sheep's clothing, then somebody might bite into it, right? And so he says you're not going to die, and look what will happen. God is holding out on you guys. It's like he wants to be better than you. He knows that if you eat from this tree, you're going to be more like him, and he doesn't want that. You see what I'm saying? I'm not stretching this. This is what it says. I guess that implies that I am stretching the other parts. But when the woman saw that the fruit of the tree was good for food and pleasing to the eye and also desirable for gaining wisdom, she took some and ate it. She also gave some to her husband who was with her, and he ate it. The eyes of both of them were open, and they realized they were naked, so they sewed fig leaves, there's the fig leaves, together and made skin for themselves, or clothes for themselves. Okay, so there's a lot happened, and there's a reason why this is in the beginning of the Bible. And it was always in the beginning of the Bible. Some of the books have moved around as far as, you know, how theologians have done it and when they had scrolls and stuff. But Genesis has always been in the beginning of the Bible in any form because it is the introduction. And there's a lot of things that happen in the introduction to a book, right? And this is even just the first couple chapters of the Bible. So this is really setting up everything. Everything that comes after this is a result of what happened here in the garden. So it's very, very important. That's why you'll hear, you might be reading a book on marriage or something, and they'll refer back to the garden. You might be reading a book on raising kids, they'll refer back to the garden. And it's right. It's because a lot of stuff happened in the garden. A lot of important stuff happened. And here it is. They didn't die, though. Isn't that weird? Didn't you expect her to, like, take a bite out of the fruit and just... kind of like in The Princess Bride, when he has the Iocane, and Iocane, I bet my life on it. If you guys haven't seen that, you have to see it. Princess Bride. So maybe this fruit would be like Iocane or something, you know? But no, she doesn't die. In fact, they do seem to get some sort of knowledge because suddenly they realize that they're naked. So something's going on here. Something changed in their psyche. So I think, some people actually think that God was just being merciful with them and they didn't die immediately because he was just being nice and he let them live a little bit longer. I don't think so. I don't buy that. God said that you will die on that very day, in fact, is the Hebrew that's there, on Tom, that very day you will die. And we can see something happened to them right when they ate from it. So I think they died spiritually. Yeah. They died spiritually. And the reason how they died spiritually is not even symbolic or anything like that, but it says earlier that he created them in God's image, his own image. And it said that he breathed the breath of life into them. So it's very important, but I think that he breathed the Holy Spirit into them. So Adam and Eve started out with the same Holy Spirit that we are after when we become Christians. And it all ties together, by the way. And so when they died spiritually, it was because the Spirit had left them. Why could the Spirit not be in them anymore? Well, because God had to treat them kind of as equals, if you think about it, because now they know good and evil. This one thing that he hadn't created them to have, this one thing that he hadn't created them to partake in or share in or be able to handle it, suddenly now they have it, and he has to treat them as entities knowing the knowledge of good and evil. Interesting, right? Okay. So, getting the knowledge of God did not want them to have, dying spiritually, good. Now, here I put in the last thing is relating to God through obedience. So what happens after this? Well, we don't have time to read the whole Bible, but you follow this whole line of people from Noah to Abraham to Isaac to the 12 and through Egypt and Moses, and then you get the law, right? He gives them all these laws. First just 10, and then Moses goes to town. And just gives them. You can read Deuteronomy and Leviticus. He just keeps going and going, giving them more and more laws. And you can see through this lineage that God is handpicking these people. I think, why did he pick Noah? It's because he had this pure heart. Everybody else was like evil and doing evil. I found Noah. So we're going to get him and his family. And then why did he pick Abraham? Well, because he was faithful, and his faith is credit to him as righteousness. And he listened to God. When he told him to move, he did move. When he said, hey, you should kill your son, he actually gave it a shot. And then from Abraham, he created the whole nation of Israel. And then with Moses, he gave them all the laws and took them out of Egypt and gave them the land. And so what is all this? It's like God was hand-picking the best people that he could find on the surface of the earth to be able to have the law, these laws from God that he was going to give. He didn't give them to anybody else. He just gave it to Israel. And these people were hand-picked to be able to follow it the best that anybody else could follow it. But how did they do? No, they didn't do very well. I don't think they did any better than anybody else. But God was showing, though, that even if you pick the best-hearted people, the most faithful people, and give them a chance, that because people weren't created to handle this knowledge, we can't handle it. We can do good and evil for just a little bit, but then we mess up. And the only way that we could relate to God while we were under the law was through obedience. So how are you doing with God? Well, how are you doing following the law? Are you following them? Well, you must be doing well. If you're not following them, even just one, then you're not doing well. So that is how that's what I mean by relate it to God. That's how we interacted with God in the Old Covenant, was through following laws. Okay. So I put this thing about what other things can we get. That's because I put this little hyperlink here to my website, because I have a whole article on this where I explain a lot of these things more. But The idea is that this is what the fig tree represented. All this stuff that I'm talking about, the fig tree, since it was the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, and the fruit that you ate from it gave you this knowledge that God didn't want you to have, and that the Jews had gotten this law, and they tried as best they could to follow it, and the Pharisees of Jesus' time even figured out that they had found a way to follow it, potentially, but Jesus showed them wrong. All of this stuff is symbolized in this one fruit. This one little fruit from a fig. So the next time you get a fig Newton, think about this. So what did Jesus do? So Jesus is about ready to die. It's his last week on the earth. And he sees this fig tree, and he goes up to it, and it doesn't have any fruit on it because it's not even supposed to have fruit on it. And he curses the tree, and it dies. And then he says, you've never borne fruit, and may you never bear fruit again. Hopefully you can kind of see what he's saying there now. This decision that Adam and Eve had made back in the garden to eat the fruit, to be able to be more like God, even though God didn't want them to be that way, but God was holding out on them as far as they knew from what Satan had said. They should have this knowledge, and they made a terrible decision. And mankind suffered for it all the way up until when Jesus rectified it. Jesus came, he died on the cross, which ended the law, and he rose from the dead. And that is what gives us the chance, the ability to be able to have the Spirit restored to us. So you can kind of see Jesus' mission as one of restoring things to how they were supposed to be before Adam and Eve ate from the tree. So what kind of things, that's what I'm saying, what kind of things can you get just out of this one little thing about killing a tree? Why did God change so much from the Old Testament to the New Testament? I've heard that's a really oft-asked question. And it makes sense. I mean, I can understand why people have the question. I had the question. He seems so mean in the Old Testament. I mean, he's like killing people left and right, raining fire down on heaven. And then Jesus comes along and everything is nice all again. What happened? We think that God changed. What really changed was God's ability to relate to us. So while we are under the law, he had to treat us as those under the law. And while when the law was taken away again, when Jesus died on the cross, then he could go back to relating to us through grace and mercy. Why did Jesus come when he did? I've heard that question asked. That's a big question, right? Could it be answered by a dead tree? Well, why did Jesus come when he did? Well, he handpicked all these people from Adam and Eve all the way, I gave the whole lineage. He handpicked all these people, and then he had to give them a time period to show humanity that they could not follow the law. It had to be evident to the world, whether they were looking or not, that even with the hand-picked people, the race of Israel, they could not follow the law. And when it became evident, even when the Pharisees coming along and really trying to come up with these other laws, these rules, so that keep them from breaking any of the laws, I think that is why God sent Jesus when he did, because it was clear, at least in his mind, that mankind had made a bad decision. And so it was time to end it. What is the gospel? Hopefully you can kind of see some of this coming out of this, right? I'm not saying it all comes from this one story. We just need to have the story of the fig tree, and then that's it. That's the whole gospel. No, I mean, but everything else, that's the good thing about symbolism. If you're interpreting it correctly, it should open doors. It should clarify things. It should make you have, like, aha kind of moments. So what is the gospel? I mean, the gospel is the good news, but most people don't realize that there had to be bad news if there was good news. So the bad news is what happened in the garden. And it's not just that they ate the tree and they disobeyed God, but it's this whole thing with the knowledge of good and evil. And so the bad news is the fig tree dying. That's why the tree had to die. It's why it never bore fruit and it will never bear fruit again. And that is the gospel. This has to do with salvation. Oh, yeah, let's go back to, this is the last thing. How are we doing on time? Oh, we're actually doing okay. Matthew 21. So we just read the thing about cursing a fig tree, right? And immediately with it. And then verse 20, it says, when the disciples saw this, they were amazed. How did the tree wither so quickly? They asked. Jesus replied, truly I tell you, if you have faith and do not doubt, not only can you do what was done to the fig tree, but you can say to this mountain, go throw yourself into the sea, and it will be done. If you believe, you will receive whatever you ask for in prayer. Okay, so this is another weird thing, right? Throwing a mountain into the sea. How many times has that happened since Jesus said that? Is it recorded in history ever of somebody that had the faith to tell this mountain to get up and throw itself into the sea? That's kind of how I used to see it. I would say, if I have the faith, I got to work on this. If I have the faith, then I can tell this mountain to go throw itself in the sea, right? But if nobody's ever done it, there's got to be some faithful people, right, that have lived between me and Jesus, us and Jesus. And none of them had the faith, or maybe they had the faith, but they just didn't have the will to throw a mountain into the sea. No, this is also symbolic. And it's exactly what we were just talking about, believe it or not. So mountains symbolized Israel as well. Remember Isaiah chapter 2, when it says that the mountain of the Lord will be raised above all other nations, and all nations will stream to it. So Israel represented the mountain. So the mountain is like the fig tree as well. And throwing it in the sea, but it's a big thing. It's this whole thing with the law was a big thing. It's not just a small little thing that Jesus is doing. It's like a huge thing Jesus is doing. So it's like a mountain. And being thrown in the sea is like it being thrown away. So Jesus is talking about how not only is he going to die in the grave and raise again, but these guys, that's what their job is going to be, is to continue burning fig trees. Is to continue throwing mountains into the sea, that they will go and spread the gospel. And it'll be done as long as they have faith. My goal today, if I had any goal today, was to make it not look like a stretch. Because I named my whole website after this, so if it's a stretch, then maybe I should have given it a different name. These things, all these symbols mean things. And the thing is that you might see this as like, oh, this is huge. I'm going to have to learn all this stuff. Actually, what I was trying to show from the mountain and the sea is that just from knowing a couple symbols and what they meant to them, it ends up being kind of like a lens or a key, a legend, that when you read other scriptures, suddenly these things will start popping out and they'll start making sense. And you'll see that these types of symbols, these types of cultural knowledge is all throughout the Bible, because that's who these people were back then. Without this knowledge, passages like these are just confusing and typically just not factored in, when in fact they play huge roles. That's exactly right. I'm glad I wrote that. Okay, and I already said the thing about the cultural lens. Any rate, okay, good. Well, that's basically it. Hopefully you know a little bit more about fig trees. And more importantly, though, I hope we start seeing what the gospel is, what the real gospel is, and that there really are answers to a lot of these questions that we have. And the answers can be found just by being able to use what's in the scriptures to be able to interpret them, just like Jesus did when he showed us how the parable of the sower worked. So, thank you very much. We're going to have communion, but we're going to have a song, and somebody's going to come up or something.
Wonderful.